So this is kind of putting together the theme from last time about the exponential growth in everything digital, with the phenomenon that we've just been talking about, that there is technologically the capability of saving all kinds of information about our use of computers and anything that's got a computer in it, like our cell phones or, you know, the transponders and, you know, in that the toll that we use for toll booths at cars or cash registers in supermarkets, anything, saving that information forever. So this is a great graph. This is from LaTanya Sweeney, who's a professor at Carnegie Mellon and is actually visiting Harvard. This term is actually giving a seminar next Wednesday. And this is a measure that she developed called person time per page. So a person time per page is how frequently you could record a page of information about every human being on Earth. Okay, so suppose you just wanted to take a snapshot, I mean not a picture, but a record of a diary, as it were, except instead of doing it every day, you'd want to do it for every human being on Earth, and you'd want to do it as frequently as you could, consistent with the fact that disk storage is finite. There's not infinitely, you know, you couldn't do a nano, you know, couldn't take a recorded data about every human being on Earth every nanosecond. So how frequently could you record if you wanted to take a one page of text and that amount of information about every human being on Earth? And here, this graph only goes up to 2000. In 1983, 25 years ago, you could record a page of information about every human being on Earth every 2 months. And that was just the amount of disk storage that was available to do that. By 1996, it had moved down to 1 hour. By the year 2000, it had been down to 3.5 minutes. Anybody ever see one of these graphs before, where it kind of looks really, really flat and then it suddenly shoots off? So we're now 8 years after this. I should ask her what she thinks it is now, but it's probably just a few seconds. All right, so there's plenty of disk storage out there to record everything we do. And then the only problem is to get the sensors out there, the cameras, the mouse clicks, the, you know, radio transmitters in this little thingy, which, you know, is also sending radio waves around, whatever it is to generate the data about us. And then the small issues of law and custom and practice. Okay, so the point here is that we just need to recognize that we're no longer living in an age where we can say, you know, we don't need to worry about that. You know, it's a science fiction-y scary thought, but, you know, it's impractical. Many more things are practical now than used to be, and the things that aren't practical today are likely to be practical in, you know, 2 years or 5 years or 10 years or something. Yeah, everybody understand what this statistic is? Where does the data come from? Some of it is just a very simple data source, is government records. And this is also slides from LaTanya Sweeney. So this is what they used to record on birth certificates. Not all of it would, I think, necessarily appear on the copy that they gave you, but there's child's first and last name, day, month, and year of birth, city and country of birth, father's name, mother's name, including maiden name, place of birth, mother's age and address, mother's birthplace, mother's occupation, same thing for the father. I think that's what most of our birth certificates of people in this room probably had. So here's what it looks like today for a typical birth certificate. This is all the information, and of course it's all on disk somewhere. Well, you know, there's some of the usual stuff. Blood type now, they start to record place, date of birth. These are the number of bytes of data, okay, in each field. But of course, that's not the end of it. You know, country of birth, attendance name, attendance address, mother's name, okay, mother's social security number. Oh, we're starting to record social security numbers now in birth records. Mother's residence, town of residence, country of residence, mailing address, same stuff for the father, mother's elementary education and race, college education, mother's occupation, mother's industry, father's, same stuff on the father, you know, plurality, whether you're one of twins, birth order, live birth, still living, you know, all this stuff about pregnancies. Now, this is all good data for public health officials. They're very interested in tracking this stuff. Right? There are good social reasons to record this information, at least in aggregate. Baby's weight, Apgar scores, native blood test labs, you know, facility mother transferred from, tobacco use during pregnancy. Okay? Any of you women here have children? You had children? Right? Did you know that they record whether you smoked during your pregnancy when the child was born? No, I didn't think you did. Yeah. mother's weight gain, it's there in the database. Alcohol use during pregnancy. I don't know how they determined whether you told them the truth about that, but apparently that data was collected at some moment when you probably were not thinking too clearly about what you were saying. Hospital ID, sent to Romans. I have no idea what that one means, but anyway, on and on and on, okay? Medical risk factors, anemia, amniocentesis, electronic fetal monitoring, you know, complications of labor, all of the things that, you know, that can go wrong during the birth process. It's all recorded. Method of delivery, fetal alcohol syndrome, you know, assisted ventilation, congenital abnormalities. Okay, so it's scary stuff. And except, of course, you know, this just goes into some public health database, and they don't, when they use it for medical research or public health research, they don't attach your name to it because there are privacy rules. And actually, privacy rules for medical data are particularly extreme. But now we get another problem. And the other problem is that when you try to make data like this anonymous by taking out, like, you know, the name, if the data are rich enough and you've got access to some other database that overlaps with it in some way, you can reconstruct the exact identity of the person that the so-called anonymized data was about. So this is actually a slide. This actually happened at here at Harvard, where it turned out, with very little information and a poorly designed system, it was for a time possible to get the prescription drug records of anybody with a Harvard ID who used the Harvard Health Service. This is from 2005. Jacob Russell actually took the BITS course, I think around the time he was writing this article, and he's now in law school. So let's just you know, make sure you understand how this business of de-identifying and re-identifying works. Okay, so here's some information: name, address, zip code, birth date, sex, and ethnicity. This is just a small segment of what is in a birth certificate record. So suppose, you know, you throw out the name, you throw out the address, you just keep the zip code, birth date, sex, and ethnicity, and you say, you know, you release that for some public study where you're just trying to understand the demographics of, you know, the city of Cambridge. And you would think that without any more information, you couldn't figure out who anybody is. But in fact, if you take two separate databases, so here's an example of a de-identified database that has that zip code, birth date, and sex information, and let's say a disease. Okay, this is way more information than you need to figure out who has AIDS in this picture, right? Because the voter registration list, which are public records, include name, street address, zip, birth date, sex, state registered, party affiliation. Those, anybody who's walked around Cambridge recently, you'd probably see them, or wherever you live. They actually literally post those outside the polling places of who's registered to vote at particular voting places. You can walk right up and see it, and I imagine these data are available electronically as well. And by putting these two things together, you know, how many people are there in 02139 who were born on May 5th, 1979? This person has got to be the same as that person with very high likelihood. Okay, so this is the way you can re-identify supposedly anonymized data. Okay, by combining so supposedly anonymized data with stuff that you have that's a matter of public record. This is a scary graph. If you know date of birth, gender, 5-digit zip code, that's all you know about someone. Date of birth, gender, and 5-digit zip code, not even the 9-digit zip code, just the 5-digit zip code. That uniquely identifies 87% of the American population. There's only one person that has, for 87% of the people, those three pieces of data are enough to identify you uniquely. This graph shows you what percentage of the population is uniquely identified according to the size of the zip code, but never mind that. The big point is the one at the top. So this is a real serious issue, and I'll just throw up this one slide. I was at a conference today, this morning, and I turned to the guy next to me and said, you know, what do you do? And he says, oh, I'm working on this stuff about DNA, trace amounts of DNA, SNPs. I don't know if anybody knows enough about this stuff to know. This is a hot area. These are not like whole DNA sequences or anything. These are little fragmentary pieces of DNA. There's a lot of interest in this stuff. A lot of research going on, and large amounts of data have been made available to scientific researchers. And this guy showed that, this is the last line of the abstract, there's a considerable push to make experimental data publicly available so that data can be combined with other studies. Our findings show that such an approach does not completely conceal identity, since it is straightforward to assess the probability that a person or relative participated in a GWA study. And after he published this paper, the NIH or whoever had made this data available for worthy purposes pulled it off the website and made it no longer available for scientific research, because it turned out that with the speed of computers that we now have, their capacity to do the analysis and the possibility to do these joins with other databases, that it was possible to identify individuals, many individuals, on the basis of the information that was in the database.